I've had the pleasure of talking with Ben Mezrich many times over the years about many of his books. His most famous would be The Accidental Billionaires, which got turned into an Aaron Sorkin screenplay for a movie called The Social Network about Mark Zuckerberg and the founding of Facebook. He also wrote one called Bringing Down the House about the MIT blackjack team that Kevin Spacey liked so much, he decided to turn it into a movie, and that was a hit called 21. Ben and I have also talked about a guy he wrote a book about who stole some lunar rocks, and, the book was called Sex on the Moon, and you can extrapolate from those two bits of information where the story went. We've also talked about his movie about people who were involved in the online poker world. That was called Straight Flush. And he's back again today with a brand new book, which is called Once Upon a Time in Russia, The Rise of the Oligarchs, a true story of ambition, wealth, betrayal, and murder. Ben, nice to have you back on the show today.
Hey, thank you. I feel like I talk to you about every year.
It seems, well, you keep pumping out and we'll keep talking. How's that?
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
What got you interested in Russia?
You know, I never wanted to write about Russia. I didn't know anything about Russia. I basically got a phone call from a Hollywood director, a guy named Brett Ratner, who did all the Rush Hour movies, and he did Hercules last year. And he's someone who I've known since the movie 21, which he was a producer on. And he said, you know, I want you to come to London and meet some guys who want to tell you a story. So I flew to London, and there was all this security everywhere. And I walk into this bar, and there was this Russian oligarch sitting there. And I immediately turned to Brett and said, no way. I don't want to do this. This is scary. But I was told this story, and I was just blown away by it. I mean, it was the greatest accumulation of wealth in the history of the world. It was a group of men who became multi-billionaires almost overnight. And then a lot of bodies piled up along the way, and it was just amazing. So I got drawn into it.
These are business people who had ties to former Russian President Yeltsin, who became rich when Russia privatized its businesses, right?
Right. Russia almost overnight went from communism to capitalism. I mean, they didn't really have a plan in place. They essentially said, okay, now we're capitalists. And Yeltsin, who was president, essentially handed away all of the resources of the country to this group of young businessmen. These were people from nowhere with no background. A lot of them were Jewish in this very anti-Semitic society, so they were kind of black marketeers. The main character of the book was a guy named Boris Berezovsky, who was a mathematician turned car salesman, and he figured out how to make billions of dollars in the car business and then was nearly assassinated. His car was blown up, his driver was decapitated, and he decided to get involved in politics to protect himself. So he became known as the godfather of the Kremlin. And he's kind of the main character of the story. And then the younger character is Roman Abramovich, who, you know, we know nowadays he owns the Chelsea Football Club in England. He's got that biggest boat in the world, or second biggest. And he was this 26-year-old guy who was making children's toys in Siberia. He was making rubber ducks. And essentially, he and Berezovsky launched an oil company. So they went from nothing to owning the second largest oil company. And a lot of craziness ensued.
It was fascinating reading this because I actually was in Moscow doing a week-long radio show in June of 1989, which would be within a year of the end of the Soviet Union. And, you know, glasnost and perestroika and Gorbachev were three words that about the only three Russian words that Americans knew at that time. And so I was there just at the point where, you know, blue jeans and bubble gum were still the currency for most Americans who had to go over there and get any deals done. And your story picks up just about 2-3 years after that, when these guys are suddenly handed the wealth of all wealth on a platter, right?
Right. I mean, you were there right before all this craziness started. But this was that moment, you know, and suddenly a group of men, at one point, seven men owned 50% of Russia's GDP, which is this crazy statistic when you think about it. But you were there right at the beginning of all this. So it went from this communist society overnight to them privatizing, because Yeltsin thought if we quickly hand the company away to private businessmen, we can keep communism from coming back ever. So it was this kind of instantaneous capitalism. But it led to a lot of murder because they didn't know how to do capitalism. So if one company was in a battle with another company, you'd literally kill the CEO of the other company.
Yeah.
And you would get it, which is just wild when you think about it.
Which almost sounds like the way the mob works. And now I've heard about, quote, the Russian mafia. And as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, well, these guys really were the Russian mafia, but they had it handed to them.
Right. You know, there's an interesting relationship, obviously. Certainly, the mob had its fingers in everything, but these were regular businessmen playing in this corrupt society. And, you know, I've interviewed them a lot about it, the guys I was talking to, and they were saying, you know, this is how it worked. You have to equate it to the Wild West in America, not, you know, to the 90s in America, but to a time period when, you know, people were gunslingers. And essentially, these were modern-era gunslingers. These were guys who, every company, like if you owned an oil company, there would be a division of wet works. There would be a group of people under your control whose job it was to essentially assassinate people. And so major corporations had, you know, assassins working for them.
So when you went over there and heard this story, you said you were a little afraid because all these heavily armed men were there with their, you know, their bodyguards, et cetera.
Yeah. One meeting I had, Ratner and I were sitting there with this oligarch, and Brett turns to the guy and goes, are we going to get killed for writing this? And the guy goes, you watch too many movies.
But that's what I want to ask you. Were you worried about telling their stories, Ben?
You know, I was very careful. First of all, when you read the book, Putin is the main character in the book, and he doesn't come off that bad. In reality, in the scope of this story, Putin's not really the bad guy. They create Putin. They handpick this guy because they think they can control him. He's this low-level KGB agent that they pull out of St. Petersburg and make president, because the oligarchs thought, we can control this guy, and they were very wrong about that.
Yeah.
But in the scope of the story, he's not the bad guy. So, you know, it's not an attack book. Usually the people who get in trouble are people who are attacking Putin, who are opposition to him. And that's not really what this story is. But, yeah, there were definitely, obviously, some fears in doing a story like this, and I was just very careful to not, you know, when you read the book, it's much more like a James Bond-esque thriller. It's a thriller involving all true stuff. But it's not sort of this protest book.
I'm guessing, but nobody had to tell you, Ben, you don't want to get on Putin's bad side. You knew that, right?
Well, you know, you don't want to, and there's certainly things in the book that I'm sure, you know, that Litvinenko, the guy who was poisoned with polonium, is a big character in the story.
Well, let's talk about that,
sure,
for just a second, because people may remember this story. It was, I guess, about from nine years ago. This guy, Litvinenko, who's a character in your story, a real-life guy, got on somebody's bad side and ended up being poisoned to death by this radioactive, what was it called again?
Yeah, polonium-210, which is a radioactive element. It was the first act of nuclear assassination. Basically, he was a KGB agent who had been investigating Boris Berezovsky, that attempted assassination I told you about that happened in 1994. He became a moonlighter. He started to work for Berezovsky as a security agent. Then he pissed off his own bosses at the KGB by refusing the order to murder Berezovsky. When he did this, he caught the attention of Putin, who at that time was the head of the FSB, which was the KGB, and Putin decided he did not like this guy. So Litvinenko was arrested, then he ran to England, and he was living in England when he went out to breakfast with a couple of Russians, later in the night he had some tea with them, went home, and died, eventually got really sick over the next couple weeks. And it turned out he was ingested polonium, which is the rarest sort of thing on Earth.
Yeah.
It can only be made by two countries, us and Russia, basically. And he blamed Putin. You know, on his deathbed, he wrote a letter saying, Putin, you'll never look in the mirror again without thinking of me. In reality, I don't think Putin thinks twice about him ever. but the guy, you know, died in a very horrific way. And it does trace back to Putin in some degrees. I mean, the trial is still ongoing in England. The guys, the Russians he had lunch with, like, ran back home to Moscow and themselves nearly died of polonium poisoning. Polonium is a very bad weapon to kill someone with because anybody who touches it can get really sick from it.
But talk about a striking fear in the hearts of anybody who might want to mess with you. They all heard the Litvinenko polonium story.
Right. I mean, everyone's heard that story because he died horribly over a period of weeks, slowly just withered away. And it's not a fun way to go. So, yes, I mean, definitely that story is one that, you know, it was difficult to tell in any good light. Overall, you know, it's part of the story. It's crazy. I mean, you look at these oligarchs, and there were 1,000 businessmen murdered in the late 90s in Russia. You would literally have bombings on the street. You would have, you know, businessmen chopped up, things like that. All the things you kind of read about in The Sopranos, but this was how business took place. And that's just an intriguing part of the story, I think.
Talking with Ben Mesrick about his book, Once Upon a Time in Russia, here on the Big 550 KTRS. There's a one thing in the book that reminded me a little bit of the story of the MIT blackjack team, which you wrote about in Bringing Down the House. In that there were these young people who had more money than they knew what to do with and no place to put it, and so they were carrying around backpacks full of casino chips and, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash that they're traveling across the country with. And in this book, boom, here we go again with hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars worth of cash being carried by people in briefcases as payoffs, right?
Right, right. I mean, this is crazy. So Boris Berezov, he helped set up this oil company, or Abramovich. And in return, Abramovich simply had to give him whatever money he asked for. So literally, he would say, okay, I want $3 million. And a woman would fill suitcases, and they'd carry these suitcases over to where Berezovsky worked, to his club he owned. And suitcases full of cash, millions of dollars in cash, were just dropped off on a weekly basis. All told, he was paid hundreds of millions of dollars over a period of 3 years. And then the craziest thing is when Berezovsky fell out of favor with Putin and had to run, Abramovich decided to pay him off to go away. So he gave him $1.3 billion in a payoff on an airfield in McGee, France, and said, this is your money, now go away.
How many suitcases is that, $1.3 billion?
Well, that was a check, basically, a cashier-type check. It was bonds. It was off of another company. But basically, it was cash, and it was at $1.3 billion, which he then blew through. Berezovsky ended up bankrupt by 2012.
Wow.
So it's this kind of crazy thing where how do you spend that kind of money? it's fun for a while, I think, but it's just a crazy thought.
In hearing these stories, you know, Berezovsky going from just being a car dealer, although he was dealing the Lada, which was the most popular car in Russia and also one of the worst cars in the world, had a horrible reputation. But in Russia, it was a big thing because most people could barely afford to get one. And he had the biggest dealership in Moscow. So he goes from basically just being this car dealer to this incredibly rich guy to being this guy who's broke and in the end dead. And I couldn't help but thinking, are there equivalents in U.S. business that you know of? Are there parallels between what happened in Russia and what has happened here?
I will say nowadays, a lot of people talk about the 1% or the sort of marriage of business and politics. I mean, we're getting closer to an oligarchy, I think. It's nothing like Russia. Russia, we're talking about seven men owning 50% of the country's GDP. Here, obviously, it's spread out a little bit more. You know, the difference is, I think, the ruthlessness, or sort of the murder, the idea that you would just kill someone who's your competitor. We haven't seen that here in a long time. But certainly the robber baron era, stuff like that happened. But certainly not in the 90s. I mean, this wasn't that long ago. And then Berezovsky was found hanging above his bathtub a year and a half ago, right? 2 years ago, whatever it was. So this is still kind of very new in Russia. But we certainly have a little bit of an oligarchy going on here.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not as brazen. But yes, definitely.
The book starts in the Yeltsin years and ends in the Putin years. What's the difference between the two men?
Very different. So Yeltsin was really, you know, you wouldn't call him, it wasn't a democracy by any means, but he certainly believed in a country of somewhat freedom. I think Putin is much more of this power player. He's a guy who took over the country and decided it's all about Russia. He's always said that he felt like the biggest, you know, mistake of the last 100 years was the fall of the Soviet Union. So Putin is a guy who really believes in this strong, powerful Russia. He took power at the hands of the oligarchs and then quickly switched it around. A week after he took power, he invited all the oligarchs to Stalin's old house, and, you know, where you see bullet holes in the walls, basically, where people are lined up and shot. And he said to the oligarchs, you know, you've all made a lot of money. You've all done well. You can keep your money, but just stay out of my way. And that's the moment that Russia kind of changed, and it became this pyramid with Putin on the top. As long as you stay in Putin's favor, you can stay alive. And if you're against Putin, you're pretty much in exile or killed. There's a big difference between the two men. But also, Yeltsin was sick all the time. He was drunk all the time.
Yeah.
You know, there's stories where he, like, fell off a bridge at one point or all these kind of stories like that. And Putin is not like that. Putin's very much in control.
Yeah, plus we never saw Yeltsin with his shirt off, which I think was a good thing.
It was probably a very good thing, yeah.
What about the economic sanctions that the U.S. and other Western countries have had in effect and tightened over the last couple of years against Russia, particularly as Putin has pushed his way back into Crimea? Are those sanctions having any effect, do you think?
Well, I mean, they hurt the Russian people a lot. You know, Putin, it's an interesting story. People ask me all the time, will the oligarchs band together and take Putin down? And that's misunderstanding Putin. It's the other way around. The only oligarchs who still are powerful are the ones that Putin allows to be powerful. The more you sanction Putin, essentially, he just pulls his money from the oligarchs, and the oligarchs all get hurt. Russian people have always had it bad. You know, it's been bad for them under the czars. It was bad for them under communism with the bread lines, and it's bad for them now. It's never been good for them. And so I do think that the sanctions, in the end, push Putin into a corner. They make him feel more about being nationalistic. And the people love Putin. They see it as the West being evil and that Putin is their savior. Putin is more popular than any president we've ever had. And any opposition you see to Putin is very small. These people, you know, the guy who was just murdered recently near the Kremlin, Nemtsov, he was not a powerful guy, and he was no threat to Putin. So the idea that, you know, there's going to be this sort of groundswell revolution against Putin, I think, is wrong.
There's nobody
nobody's going up against Putin there.
Yeah, but that's because they don't want their tea to be laced with polonium.
I think that's one big problem. But in general, they really believe that Putin is the one leading them in the right direction.
So I mentioned that a couple of your books along the way have been turned into blockbuster motion pictures. Have you sold the rights to this one yet?
Yeah, this one's set up at Warner's studio, and Brett Ratner is producing it, and it's on a fast track. So this movie is going to be made pretty soon. So, yeah, it's going to be very exciting. But I actually sold this movie at the same time I sold the book, so it's sort of moving along quickly.
So at some point, after you were in that building in Russia and you saw all these people and you and Brett Ratner are sitting there and you're hearing the story, was that when you said, oh, I have to write this? Or did it take a while after that to get more details?
It took a while. I went back and forth meeting with people. I wanted to make sure that it was safe, but I wanted to make sure that it was a story that I could tell. I mean, I'm not this Russian historian. This is not a 1,000-page book on Russia.
Yeah.
And most books on Russia are like 1,000 pages long.
Yeah.
This is really a thriller about two men and Putin. And I wanted it to be very quick and read like a movie. And so once I figured that out, then I was really all in. And
I know the book has just been published, but any feedback from Russia?
You know, so far it's all been positive. I do know a copy has gotten to Putin, so I do not know what his opinion of it is yet. The Russians, you know, that I've talked to seem to be happy with it. But, you know, I don't know. I'm avoiding going in that direction for a while.
Have you also avoided a cup of tea lately, Ben?
I have. I haven't even gone to London. I'm not even going to the UK for the book tour because that's where a lot of these guys seem to get killed. In general, I've felt, you know, no, everyone's liked it. So it's kind of like how people like The Godfather, you know, it's seeing it up there usually makes people pretty happy.
All right. Before I let you go, I've got to ask you, what's the status of the MIT blackjack team these days?
It's funny you ask. I actually was just in Vegas 2 weeks ago with the main character of 21, the real guy. And you know, we can't play blackjack, but he still goes to Vegas a lot. There is still a team. It doesn't last very long because casinos know what they're doing. But card counting still works, just for short periods of time.
The book and the movie didn't put him out of business?
Well, it changed it. You know, you don't last for 3 years playing blackjack anymore. You last 6 months, and then they figure out your team. But team method still does work.
Interesting. Well, good luck with the new book. Not that you need it since you've already sold it as a movie, but let's get some people to buy the book at least and read it because it is a fascinating story. It's called Once Upon a Time in Russia, The Rise of the Oligarchs, a true story of ambition, wealth, betrayal, and murder. Ben Mesrick, it is always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.